Hey guys, are you in a band in Austin and you're just practicing and practicing, but your roommates, your neighbors, they're getting fed up with you being in the garage, getting fed up with you practicing in the living room. You need to go to a place where you can stretch out volume-wise, where you can stretch out with your band, where you can go over something over and over again and not bother anyone. Well, that place is called Space. Space Rehearsal Recording is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording. Countless pros, including myself, rehearsed there. You can find them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Bowdy.
All right. Hello. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today, this lovely Friday, wherever you are listening to this from. I have my old friend Nathan Harlan on. He has a new band called The Big Fix. You can find out all about them by going to thebigfix.band. Yes, .band is a new domain address. So thebigfix.band. Nathan and I were in a band together back in 2003 and 2004 called Endosheen. It was actually his band, and I joined it after they made a record called Day 2, and they needed a fifth guy in the band to kind of do the stuff that no one else wanted to do. And that's what I did. And we toured together, and we had a lot of fun, but it was a crazy time. We were all going through personal turmoil of our own. We talk about it during the conversation, but I haven't really hung out with Nathan over the last decade. So we catch up. He's been working in film. He's been writing. He's been acting. He's been working on films. So we have a great conversation catching up over time, what's been going on with him, what's been going on with me. His new band, The Big Fix, is fantastic. They have some recordings that they made with our old friend Lars Goransson at thebigfix.band, so you can go there and find out all about it. We actually talk about doing some shows together. And speaking of shows, I have a show coming up this Thursday, May 28th at the 502 Bar in San Antonio. I'll be opening for my dear friend Joseph King, who is in town from New York. He is touring all around Texas. You can go to josephking.com and find out what's going on with him. Anyway, come on out to the 502 Bar. I don't know exactly what time I play. Find out by going there. Maybe come early. Have a drink. Say hello. Buy me a drink. You know how it is. Guy needs a drink. Come on out to the show. I'm hoping to do some more solo shows this summer, so keep that in mind. What else is going on with me this week? Not a lot. I don't have any Skyrocket shows this week. We don't have any shows. Trish, our singer, is out of town, and we have the week off, so that is interesting. It's not really very often that we have the week off. No rehearsal, no nothing. So I'm just like going to movies, writing songs, doing podcasts. I saw The Avengers. I'm going to go see Pitch Perfect, going to try and see Mad Max, and try and see Poltergeist all this weekend, and go to some parties. Got invited to. Don't normally get to go to parties on the weekend because I'm always playing. So, hey man, you don't need the story of my life right now, do you? Maybe you need the story of Nathan Harlan's life. Let's sit back and talk to my friend Nathan Harlan, my dear old friend, former Endosheen bandmate. You can find out all about his new band, The Big Fix, by going to thebigfix.band, all right? Let's talk to Nathan Harlan. You guys have a great weekend. Let's get down.
Sold that thing. Like, I don't remember where. I don't remember who we sold it to. I don't remember what. We sold it somewhere.
Is it weird? Can I ask you what happened? Okay. We were on tour together.
Yeah.
And then I was like,
it's fun times.
My entire life was falling apart outside of the band. And then everyone in the band was completely insane. And I was like, I got to go somewhere.
I gotta go somewhere.
You know what I mean? Like I was at my, I mean, that was like the worst. That was the end of, like, I left my wife,
yeah,
when I got home from that tour.
Yeah, in the middle of that tour.
Yeah.
It's funny. We were
intense, man.
Yeah, we were talking about Steven and I were talking about that a couple weeks ago. I don't remember how it came up. I think maybe I'd mentioned.
And you,
like,
poor guys were like a regular band, and then you hired this guy to be like the extra guy who comes with like even more baggage than you guys have at the time.
Well, it was it all fit into it, man. I remember, dude, you and Daryl, fuck, yeah. Like right off the bat, first show, you
we
guys are like
each other the wrong way.
I was like, oh Jesus, both you guys, it was fucking funny. We're talking about that. I was like, oh my god, that was the beginning of that tour, and just that, yeah. We were already falling apart as a band.
So there was some intense, something happened, and Daryl like ran off the last night I played with you guys in like Lawrence, Kansas or something, right? Or somewhere like that. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We were in Lawrence.
Yeah.
Because you guys.
I rode home with Steven and
right,
Lynn.
Right.
Like, I didn't even ride home with the other guys.
That's right. Like, you rode home with them.
I want to go home with a family.
That's right. You totally did.
Really,
and then
sad.
Did Casey go with you too?
No, it was me and Casey.
So it was you, Steven, and Lynn?
Yeah.
And then it was me, Daryl, and Casey that rode in the van?
Yeah.
But I feel like there was another car too. I feel like. I don't remember.
Well, so then you guys, but then, I mean, good things were happening. I remember that you guys got that Arizona Jeans thing.
Yeah. Was that at that time?
I think so, right after that.
Yeah.
And then you toured, and then it just kind of like, how did you guys call it quits? Because everyone's still friends. You're playing, I mean, Steven's in the Big Fix.
Yeah. Well, Casey and I don't talk to Casey anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't talked to him in... since we split up, basically.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I think it was just, I think we're all wanting different things.
Yeah.
You know, really, I think is what it really boiled down to. And as you said, like, there's, by that point in the band, there was so much headbutting, and, like, everyone was just spread thin, I guess, you know?
First of all, a band, just by design, a band is destined to break up.
It really
there's
is.
There's no way. I mean, there's just no way. There's no way.
No,
I mean, U2 is like the only...
Yeah, the Rolling Stones. I mean, it's crazy. Like, that's the
there's only... There's only a couple bands.
There
yeah.
really is. You know, that's the one thing, you know, people have asked before, like, what's the hardest thing about being in a band? And it's fucking keeping it together, man. That's the hardest thing, is keeping everyone... together to keep doing it. I mean, that's the hardest part. It's not the music.
And the way
it's not anything. It's actually fucking logistics and keeping each other together.
Right. And the track that you guys got on, which is the track to success, is also the track to total doom. Because unless you cross some threshold where you make some money and get some relief, you are poor for 3 years on the road with these same dudes that are also poor.
Yeah.
No one's having a good time.
Yeah, three stinky dudes in a fucking little van.
Yeah. Yeah. So, then you left, and then you started pursuing acting. Were you acting before that?
No.
No?
No, but I went to film school.
Okay.
At UT.
I remember that, yeah.
Before, well, like, as I was starting Indochine. So by the time I was done with school, we were already playing around town, and then I pursued that, and that's what I was doing. So, yeah, after Indochine broke up, you know, I was burnt out. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do musically.
Right. When you were in film school, though, what did you want to
direct and write? Yeah. And so, I started, taking a few acting classes around town, really, because I still, I've directed a few short films since then, and I did some in school as well, and I'm always writing.
What was that song? You know, son of yourself. God, it was a song on the song from the album before I joined the band.
Okay.
You bent down.
Oh, Discover. Yeah,
Discover
was,
Yourself.
Yeah.
Did you direct that? Because that was beautiful.
No.
I remember.
That was cool. Yeah.
I remember seeing that when you guys had asked me to join. I was like, well, it's a great song, but they got a pretty cool fucking video, too.
Yeah, no, that was. God, man, you know, it sucks. I wish I can't remember their names. I'll have to look it up.
For some reason,
it was these German filmmakers. And it was like an art piece. So somehow they, I guess Trevor, like one of them taught at UT, taught visual arts at UT. God, Karen, oh, it's going to drive me nuts. But anyway, so I guess Trevor somehow got a hold of her and they were looking for a band for this, for that piece. Remember, it was like a little girl. She's like dancing outside.
Right.
And so somehow they got a hold of the song and they liked it. And so they asked us to do it. And then they shot us and did that. And then they ended up, it was for some art exhibit in Berlin was the end goal for what they were doing. So they ended up, they made a little book, a hardback book about the, I think I have it somewhere, about the filmmakers and then about the project. And I think it was called like Four Walls or something like that. And
you guys were like in a barn or something.
Yeah. We're like in this like back house and it was, you know, it was like tracked, like the camera was like through the windows, through the house and kind of all around. It's like one, I think it's one continuous shot.
That's one of the things that I was taken aback by when I saw it.
Yeah. I think it was because it kind of followed her and then she kind of is outside dancing and then kind of goes to the window and then it,
right.
And then you see us in there, she's watching us and then it comes back out, back to her. But so I think they ended up projecting that on four screens in some exhibit in Berlin.
Oh, cool.
Was the end result of that. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Wish I could have seen that. It would have been cool. But
so back to Post-Indochine, just real fast, because I just want to figure out when, like what, like the lost name. <for me.
laughs> the lost years. Yeah, so I started taking these acting classes, and I started, and it's mainly because I wanted to get back into filmmaking and not really as an actor, but I thought it would help to, you know, it helps to learn every craft
and
on a set.
And if you're going to direct actors.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of my goal. And then I started liking that, and I started getting some work doing that, and I'm still working as an actor. I've got a film coming up in at the end of the year. Or not in August in New York. I'm going back there. So anyway, I did that here for a while. I moved to New York for a few years.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I've also been the last, like, while I was in New York, I started doing some film scoring. So,
really?
Yeah, so I did a feature and I've done a couple of shorts. The last thing I did was mid last year was I did a little short doc, and now I'm actually doing some cues for C3.
Oh yeah.
So my buddy Daniel Gibbs, he's the video producer over there, and you know they're always looking for clients that are looking for just background music in a spot or just, you know, different spots basically. So just in the last month and a half, Daniel was like, hey man, you know, we go to all these sound banks to find music. Why don't, can you just write us some stuff?
Yeah.
You know, so I've been kind of doing that. I've written three of them for them so far, and whether they're used or not, whatever, you know, who knows, you know, but
isn't that funny? Like,
it's fun. It's
I've
cool.
done some, it is fun. It's
a
super
different
fun
because it's a different, it's shit that I would never write
of course
on my own. Like I wouldn't sit down and write stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. Same with like doing film scoring because, you know, it's not like, okay, I'm going to write this song and however long it is however long it is. No, man, this fucking song has got to be 2 minutes and 42 seconds on the dot. Like it has to be because that's
42 point something
seconds. You know, you can't, and it's like, you got to cut a, you know, I got to, so it's interesting writing in that way because you got to, because in your music mind, you have to make some sense of it. You got to have like, especially if you want melodies and little motifs, like they've got to fit, you know? And
So it's almost like the songwriting game. It almost gives you a reason to write the
song. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I got to fill this thing.
Right. I got to do this thing.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And it's nice to have the parameters. And so let me ask you because I've never scored anything like that, but it seems like it would be just awesome. How do you do it? You just watch, they give you like a kind of a rough.
Yeah, I mean.
A rough cut
edit,
of the movie.
Well, usually, you know.
And you know what parts you have to write music for.
Right. Well, no, what they, you know, what they, the way, okay, so the feature I did, it was kind of, you need to have a a final cut. You need to have like a locked picture in order to start doing music, because if it starts changing, if we're going to add a few more frames, or we're going to, you know, we're going to re-edit this scene, then all of a sudden totally your music's fucked. Right. Like, it doesn't work anymore. Right. So like, you really have to wait. But what's good, you know, when I did the feature, while they were editing, I would go over and watch them, you know, I'd sit in with on some of the edits. So yeah. I could kind of start getting a vibe of where it's going, scenes, and then I was talking to the director was super hands on. So we'd talk and we'd look at things, and I would just start kind of giving him sounds and stuff, because he was a very abstract thinker and talker. The director was of the feature that I did. So like, he wanted a lot of things. He'd be like, you know, I'm looking for, I want it to sound like a wheelbarrow has been rotting in the middle of the woods for 20 years, and it's rusted, and the sound that the trees make off of the wheelbarrow as it's decomposing into the earth. I want it to sound like that, that. I'm like, so I do some delay stuff.
Piano?
Yeah. I do some delay guitar stuff. Something like that. Yeah. Yes. So it's like a matter of deciphering his metaphors into okay, you know, this is what you're looking for. But with him, so that was cool. But overall, at the end, you know, I didn't do a whole hell of a lot of work until it was locked, you know, like I said, because otherwise you're redoing shit because the edit's changing. So you really have to wait for the edit to be locked down, you know, especially if you're composing to a scene, as opposed to just like, here's a song,
right?
You know, a soundtrack.
And I guess all that stuff is now, I mean, you don't have to go to a special place to do it anymore. You can do it on your own.
I did it in my apartment in New York. You know, I used GarageBand on that.
Wow.
Just a GarageBand. I used my Les Paul acoustic guitar and a Roland Juno keyboard. And that was awesome. And then Reason. I use Reason a lot for all the samples and triggers and different sounds and stuff. So that was it, man. I had no percussion.
Wow.
It was all, because that was all very like spacey, kind of atmospheric.
Right.
It was a lot of, you know, I guess kind of, you know, Floyd-y.
That
was the kind of stuff I was kind of going for, you know.
How do you get work like that? Like, how do you let people know you would be into doing that?
Just talking. I mean, that's the thing. It's hard. I don't get a whole lot of work doing that.
No.
Because I mean, that's a tough racket. You know, it's been mainly, you know, I got the shorts that I've done have just been through, you know, network meeting. Most of them have been filmmakers I've already worked with that know I'm a musician.
Right.
So like, hey, have you, that's how I've got my first feature. It's friends of mine that made it, and they're like, hey, would you want to maybe tackle doing a score? So I like gave them little samples of ideas, and they liked it. And so
then you got the gig.
So then I got the gig. And then the shorts, same thing, you know, people that I've worked with, you know, in film doing other things that had heard that, you know, after I did that feature, that, oh, cool, you can do this. So, you know, would you want to do, you know, whatever?
Sure.
You want to do the short? Sure. You know.
So what made you leave New York and come back here? It's just easier to live?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, it was funny. I've just built up such a crew of people, you know, living here for 20 years. I just know so many people here. I've all my little circles of all the people I love, all my friends, and even work, you know, I was finding myself, I mean, I was going back and forth a lot, and I'd say the 2 years I lived in New York, I spent
half the time here,
you know, because I'd get work here,
and
you know, and so I'd come down here and do that. So it just, and then where I was living in New York, there's this crazy landlord. Everyone has a crazy landlord story in New York, I think, and ours was fucking crazy too. So we ended up having to get out of our place, and it just worked
out.
Yeah, because it was at the very end of January. I knew South By was coming up. I knew I was gonna have work for South By, so I'd be coming to Austin anyway. And I had to be at, and I was like, you know, I got to go look for another place here. I'm going to be going back to, and my girlfriend lives here.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I just have, I'm so rooted here.
Oh, right, because she didn't move.
No, yeah. So I'm just so rooted here. Yeah. So it's just like, well, fuck it, man. This is kind of a sign to.
And there's, I mean, there is work to be had here.
There is. There is. And even, there's even more so now, you know, even since I left and then have come back, you know, that was 4 or 5 years ago when I left. God, man, since then, dude, coming back here, it's crazy. Like when I,
oh, yeah.
I mean, when I, every time I'd, you know, come here every couple months from New York and the landscape is different.
Yeah, totally.
And then when I finally moved back here and it was actually, and I wasn't, you know, I was living again here.
Yeah.
I'm exploring. It's a whole, it's a different city. It's like, cool, I can, it's re-inspiring. You know, people bitch about,
inspiring.
People you, bitch you about the away. Progress. Yeah, yeah, you yeah. know, and like, oh, people are fucking this town up. All
but
these people moving in here.
As inspiring.
It, you should, you know, because.
It's not going to stop.
It's not going to stop, first of all. Yeah. Like, fucking accept it. It's just going to keep growing. Yeah. And the cool thing, the thing I hope, and the thing I'm starting to see is, you know, man, more culture is being brought here, which I love about New York, which is
not,
the main
not
thing.
Not just bands at bars culture.
Right, like right, more, right.
Because
no.
that's all Austin really had.
No, it really, you're absolutely right. I mean, it really is. That was it, man. I mean, you had the university.
Yeah.
And then you had...
But like the art and theater and shit is all in Houston.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what I mean?
There's, yeah, there's...
It's good that it's getting some stuff.
I love it, man. Yeah. You know? And film is like... Is blowing what? Up all over the place.
Do you know
here.
What shows they're doing here?
No, I don't know.
Every once in a while there's like a show.
I see shit all over the place. From what I've heard
Revolution
was
here.
Yeah, Revolution. I don't think they're filming anymore. I think The Mentalist was shooting here for a while. It might
never
still
see.
Be... Yeah, American Crime... Or something, American Crime or America's Crime. I don't know. I don't want, you know, but I know that was shooting here. That might still be shooting here. Oh, the Dust Till Dawn thing is shooting here.
Rob Franco was in that.
Right? Oh, is he?
Yeah,
that's funny.
I watched a couple of episodes of that.
That's funny. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
There's stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, and it's a good environment to. To make movies in and to make music in.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of support.
Right.
You know, just all around. You know, you go someplace, just talking movies again, like you go to, you know, New York or LA, and man, you know, just to shoot on the street, you got to have 50,000 permits. You know, it just, it's a fucking pain in the, unless you like totally guerrilla style it, which you can. But
what happens when you get caught gorilla styling?
I don't know, man. They just tell you to I don't think they do anything but just move along. Like, shut your cameras down, get
like
your shit out of here. They don't arrest you or cite you. I mean, maybe they'll cite you something if they want to be an asshole, I guess. But but I feel like they just kind of, you know, just move along. Move along. You can't shoot here. Nothing to see here.
Nathan, do you remember the morning that we were on ESPN's morning show, Cold Pizza, and the San Diego Chicken was... telling the dude that he wasn't like Santa Claus, that there was just one of him.
That's right.
That's like a classic moment. Like, do you realize we were on that show? It was us, the San Diego Chicken, and John McCain.
John McCain was on that show?
I remember going like, why is John McCain on this show? And they're like, oh, they're talking about something with the Arizona Cardinals.
What? Yeah. See, I don't remember that. I remember what's his name? Anton Vig was on it.
I don't remember that.
He's
just
playing drums. I remember because Daryl was so stoked about it. We played DC the night before. Remember?
Yeah.
And we drove
all night. Stayed up all night.
And we got there at like 5 a.m. We played at 5:30. Cold Pizza. That was the name
of
the show.
Cold Pizza. That was the name of the show.
Jesus Christ. That was.
So you didn't have a band for a while, but you were making music. Were you playing out? You were writing songs, probably.
Yeah.
And. But mostly just focusing on acting as what you were doing.
Yeah, and writing and filmmaking. I mean, I do a lot of things in film as well.
Tell me what I mean. Are you like an all around guy? Like you go out there and are gaffing scenes and stuff or no?
No. Not. I mean, I have. I don't.
Or production assistant stuff or director's assistant.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, I've AD'd. I AD'd a feature a few years ago. You know, the last thing I did that wasn't acting was a script supervised on this film in September.
What does that entail?
Yeah, it's a shit job, man. It's it's basically making sure it's continuity. It's making sure everyone else is paying attention, I guess. It's, you know, so a lot of what it has to do is making sure, okay, first of all, that everyone's getting their lines right, mm-hmm. in the script, but it's also continuity, making sure at least
someone's smoking a cigarette,
right, okay. Like hey, that shirt, when she put her purse on the last take we did, she put it on her right shoulder, she just put it on her left shoulder, you know, we got to decide which one we want to use, so when we go in for the close-up, we see the strap on whichever shoulder you want it to be on, you know, shit like that. So you're kind of like micromanaging, in a sense, like what everyone else should be kind of thinking about. Because as an actor, I pay attention to that shit.
Yeah.
And that frustrates me when I see other actors not doing it. I'm like, really? You fucking just pick up the goddamn cup with your right hand every time. Yeah. Just put that in your brain and do that. Whatever. People work differently. But so that's part of one of those script supervisor jobs.
When I saw Stripes, there's a scene. How old was I? I was like 11 or 12. There's a scene where the first time Bill Murray decides he's going to leave the army, and Harold Ramis is like, stops him, and he's like, you got me into this. But he tackles him outside, and the camera shots are ones from one side and the other ones from the other. And when it's on this side, he's got a hat on and his head's on a bag. And when the shot's from this side, he does it.
Head's gone. Yeah, exactly.
It drove me nuts even then. Wait. If someone would have told me that that was a job you could get, I would not be a musician now. that would be my job.
You're like, all right, I got to make sure this shit
next. Supervisor, yeah.
No, that's a thankless job, and it really sucks. It's a shit. I don't like doing that. I mean, I've kind of,
It's one of those jobs that shouldn't be noticed, because if they notice you, you're going to get fired.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. Yeah, it's funny. Like, I notice shit like that with movies all the time. But even after doing that, you know, it's funny. I was watching, God damn, what movie was I watching? It was some movie with, I don't remember what movie it was, but there were at least three scenes in it where the boom mic came in to the top of the frame. And I'm like, I'm looking at that, I'm going, all right, that fucking boom guy is never working again. That guy's so fired. And the thing is like, what sucks about it is the reason why there's three takes with the boom is because that's obviously the best fucking take, best performance they had. Because, you know, you look at it and go, like, why did they use that take? Yeah. There's a boom in it. Well, that was obvious. The reason why they use that is because that was the best performance. Like, and so, you know, those are the choices you got to make when you're editing a movie. Like, all right, there's no boom in this, but the performance isn't that great. It's kind of sucks. Or this performance is great and there's a little boom, but fuck it, because for the most part, people don't notice that shit, you know? Yeah. And if you're making a good movie, and if they're noticing that shit all over the place, then you got bigger problems,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
But it was funny. I was watching that, like, three scenes. Like, damn, dude, that boom guy's fired, first of all.
Totally.
Like that's, you know. But as a script supervisor, that's another, because you're standing there at the monitor. So, you know, one of your jobs also. I mean, like I said, you're kind of like echo so many other people's jobs, because it's also, should also be the DP looking at his frame going, hey, there's a fucking boom in my frame, you know, but a lot of times they're not, so you're just those extra eyes making sure everybody's doing what they need to be doing.
I love that shit, man. I've been working on a story. I haven't talked about it on here, but I actually was going to take this screenwriting class, but it was filled up for January. But I read the Sid Field screenwriting book, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
And
it's a great book.
I was just starting to reread it last week. Because I want to, I mean, that's a great medium to tell a story.
It is.
Have you written whole scripts?
I have. I'm actually.
Is it hard?
Yeah, it's fucking hard.
I'm still on an outline with my uncle.
Yeah, man. Like, it's funny. I'm doing a pass right now. I just finished a feature in January writing it. And it's funny, yesterday I sat down to like do another pass at it, so I'm kind of doing some rewriting. I worked on it some last night. I'm gonna do some more later on today, but it's something I've already been talking to some producers about, and something I want to shoot this year, so I'm really trying to finish it up. And
Would you direct it?
I want to direct it. I don't want to be in it. I might give myself a little, there might be a little role I might do, but I'd rather just concentrate on watching it, you know, being directing it. But so yeah, man, but that's the it's the third script that I've written. Feature script that I've written.
I would love to read these, man.
Yeah,
just to see.
The first two really fucking suck.
That's the thing that I'm bummed out about, because I have this one great story.
Or you're like, I just got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. I mean, yeah, take some screen. You know, another thing, too, you can get online and read scripts.
I've been doing that. That's the first thing they tell you to do. Yeah. On that. They're like, they give you ones like American Beauty.
Yeah.
I'm drawing a blank on them. There's specific ones that they're like, go read this. What's and basically, it gives you those guidelines that if you have a good story,
yeah,
and you put it in this structure, you'll have a movie.
Right. Yeah.
Like if these certain things happen at certain points,
yeah,
you know, the action, the change, you introduce something new, everything goes crazy, and then it resolves.
Yeah.
That's your movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah, there's definitely a formula.
Yeah.
For writing an hour and a, you know, a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
Well,
what got you into it? Like when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, you know, and I'd make little home movies with friends, you know, shit like that, and I don't know, I just loved movies, man. I loved the, I think as a kid too. I was an only child, so maybe it was such a form of escapism.
Yeah.
You know, same with music. Music and, but both of those things, like music and books too. But, you know, music and movies really, you know, being an only child, those were my like friends a lot of times. You know, those are the things that like, you know, I'd sit alone in my room and listen to music or watch movies. You know, so I don't know. You know, and I've, so I went to film school for that.
But what made you want to go to film school? Was it ever like, did you see like a, like at some point you're like, oh, I love movies. And all of a sudden you see like, oh, you can get involved. Like, oh, this is a guy that made one. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like sometimes you'll see like a director speaking and you'll be like, oh,
yeah,
I want to do that.
I think what really wanted me to do it was Stanley Kubrick, really.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big Kubrick fan, and maybe it was just, maybe it was the time I was getting into him, like, in my late teens.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's why it all coincided.
Yeah.
And then I read, like, you know, this, like, biography on Stanley Kubrick, and it was super interesting, you know. And,
yeah.
And, I don't know, it was one of those things, you know, too, I was, you know, I'd moved to Austin, I moved here from San Antonio for music, you know, because, and then while I was here, you know, I, of course, had pressure from my folks, like, hey, you need to go to school, you know, all that. And I was like, all right, you know, well, if I, you know, what else, like, because I don't read music, you know, and I knew, like, I'm not going to go to school for music, because I just knew I didn't have the, I didn't think I had the patience for that.
Right.
You know, because at that point I already...
It's funny because so many people in rock and roll, there's like an urgency to the music and there's an urgency to our lives and there's an... So many of us can't sit down and learn this shit because we got to get there. I got to get out there and do this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't have time to learn it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I'm not writing music to... I'm not like, I don't sit down with a pen and paper and write down notes to sell or to instruct other people with.
Right.
So like, it's like speaking, like, you know, I mean, you know, you can talk and have a conversation without knowing how to write the language.
Without
you
knowing
know?
Where the commas go.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so like, exactly, you know, so yeah. And by the time, you know, it was time for, you know, by the time I was in my late teens, I've been playing guitar for 4 years, 5 years. So I already knew how to play.
Right.
And I felt like, all right, if I go take a, it's, I'm going to be backtracking. I'm going to be starting like, okay, this is the cliff, you know, this is the, these are the scales. And this is, you know, this is your E chord. And, you know, all the shit that I already knew.
Yeah.
I just knew I'd get frustrated and be like, fucking sitting there, you know,
right.
Get frustrated. So anyway, the other, you know, the other thing, I was like, well, what else do I love? And UT at that time, and they still do, I guess, you know, they're one of the best film programs in the States. So I was like, well, this is perfect. I like movies. And they've got a good program. I'll do film.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because to me, their film school has turned out those kind of guys with that same rock and roll urgency, like Slacker and like El Mariachi, like it's those movies that are like have a lot of soul, but they're not like.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They're not amazingly lit.
Right,
and
right,
things like
right.
that, like
right. No,
but
yeah,
they have that.
Yeah, there's this
thing
rawness,
that it needs.
But
yeah.
yeah, there's that energy.
Yeah.
That
yeah, it's like an urgent kind of like rock
it's
and roll energy.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's really interesting, man. You know, look at that.
So I think those guys. I mean, they're like they hang out with rock guys. They you
right.
know, Robert Rodriguez has a band.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah, he does all his music
thing,
for. His,
yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Have you ever worked with that guy?
No, I haven't.
Been in any of his things.
Uh-uh. Be cool though.
Yeah. I think he's fascinating, and it's interesting that those guys, like, they have that super, the lowbrow makes it highbrow kind of thing.
Right,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like, him and Tarantino do like, these kind of, like...
That's interesting, yeah.
Shitty B movies, but they're super cool and artsy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's weird, man.
Yeah.
And
what are you when you're like this story that you're writing, what genre of film would it be?
It's funny, it's kind of a survivalist film, really. It's kind of a drama survivalist kind of it's a survivalist kind of movie.
Like what?
It's like an end of the world movie, but it's not.
Okay.
It's like a post-apocalyptic movie, but it's not. So it's like these characters that find themselves running from something you don't ever really know what it is, and they're on their way to. There's three of them, and they're on their way to one of them. Has a ranch house, so they're kind of going. They're heading there for a safe haven, but they, and the story is their journey there.
Okay.
So they never make it.
Oh,
but
spoiler alert.
Yeah. But they, you know, so it's kind of, you know, on their way, it's like a, kind of like a study on humanity, on
yeah.
civilization, on what it, like, how long does it take for your civilized self to break down into your animal? Basically, you know, and that's kind of what it is. It's like what does it take to take three civilized Americans and turn them into bloodthirsty animals?
Right.
How does that happen?
Yeah.
And, you know, in an environment that is desperate, like in a desperate,
that's what, yeah.
scary environment, you know, something where you're just desperation.
That's
you know?
The scariest thing to me is sort of like, if everything breaks down.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do? We're so...
And we're just left to, like, fend for ourselves.
Right, right. Feed, like, live off the land. Like, how do you
kill
do that?
Kill or be killed.
Exactly.
Like, shit that we don't deal with.
No, we don't. And that's what I, you know, I find that stuff interesting only because, you know, so much of the world has to do that. So much of the world, you know, people wake up not knowing where they're gonna when they're gonna eat again, you know, and we don't have to deal with that here.
Dude, that's
in
the thing,
States.
Is
like we're so privileged, we're so lucky and fortunate. We can go to the fucking air conditioned grocery store and buy our meat and package, or you know, everything is
it's even more than that at this point. Like, if everything broke down today, somebody would be trying to figure out why they can't post a picture of their fucking lunch.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
it's true. No, you're right. Like, you know,
we live in such a frivolous
society
now that it's it's weird.
It's interesting. I mean, it's scary, you know, you think about, you know, and I think that's, you know, maybe kind of the impetus behind all of the you know, all the farming now. People are starting to garden again. You know, all of that. I think a lot of that has to do with. I think somewhere in the back of everyone's head, people are going, we need to be prepared.
Ready, yeah.
You know, because shit, we are going to run out of resources. That will happen, whether it's in our lifetime or not.
Yeah.
It will happen. People need to learn those skills again, get their green thumb, learn how to grow peppers in their backyard, you know, learn how to hunt. Things that we did 100 years ago that it was just a way of life that now is just not, you know. No one knows, if everything's shut off right now, people would go apeshit. People would freak the fuck out, you know?
If everything shut off right now, I would spend the first week trying to make my DVD player work.
I got this idea and I can't fucking record this song. God, my microphones aren't working.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jesus. How am I going to do my podcast?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that movie sounds heavy. Let's talk about The Big Fix.
Okay.
So what... You came back here. You started playing some show. I saw you. We did a show together.
Yeah.
By yourself. And so then you started working with Lars. Did you put the band together and then work with Lars?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So about so I moved back here about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, started writing. You know, I mean, I've always been writing songs, but started writing, thinking more in terms of a band again, you know, and I didn't have one, but Steven, I've always played with Steven Six, you know, who our bass player in Indochine. And
the
he's
fro.
Yeah, the fro. He didn't have that anymore.
Well, you know, what's cool is he had one before.
Yeah. Before it was cool. Yeah. He did.
So there,
yeah, fuck you hipsters. And so he and I got together, and we just kind of work on stuff, and then it was the matter of, all right, you know, this is fun and all, but we need a drummer, you know, we need another guitar player, and then there's that whole like, oh fuck, I gotta go find a band again, you know, because that's never fun. Started playing with you know, Goody.
Yeah.
Started playing with him he has a band I would open up a few shows for them, just do an acoustic thing. Mm-hmm. His guitar player Barry liked my songs, and he's like, "Hey man, you know, I'd like to sit in on, or you know, if you'd like to work on some songs too, you know, I'm playing with Goody, but I got time. I'd like to do some other, you know, play with you as well." So he and I started working on stuff, and then our mutual friend Jason plays drums, and he started just kind of sat in one day, and then that was like about a year ago, and then we slowly started writing stuff, and you know, it is, you know, and especially, you know, Jason's got a kid.
Yeah.
Steven's got a kid. Yeah. You know, they both live in Cedar Park.
Right.
You know, everyone but me has got a full time job, right. You know. So I don't know, the last year we've been working up these songs, and I've just been getting inspired again to have a band,
yeah,
you know, and to write music and perform it with a band, you know,
yeah.
It's so much more fun than you and your guitar, you know, there's only so much you can do.
I go through like real, like, I mean, serious, like, I hate being in a band. I hate playing by myself. I hate playing, like, I just go through the gamut. I feel like I need to balance everything and I won't hate anything.
Yeah, I don't know.
After a little while playing by yourself, like you get to a point where you're like, wow, I'm doing this thing, and you do it. Like when you do it a bunch, you start playing real dynamically and it just becomes real.
Right.
It gets real good, and then all of a sudden it's like you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You can't go anywhere. You can't add anything.
No, there's, yeah.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It's funny, like, yeah, it's about... I don't know. How do you like re-inspire? Yeah. How do you re-inspire yourself? It's funny, you know, because
it's cool because getting in a room with other people totally will kick you in the ass.
It totally does. You know, and it's funny. Like we played, you know, we do the Volstead every Tuesday, and it's kind of been our, like, indefinitely now we do that every Tuesday ever since
you know,
August
before.
Or whatever, yeah. You know, the last 5 or 6 months.
Shit, we've been doing it. I'm sorry. I don't go. I will come.
Yeah. Come up and play again. But it's funny, we, you know, we, it's, we played, you know, the other night, and that was the first time we did it in like 3 weeks, I guess, because the last time we did it was before South By, and then South By, the band played there.
Okay.
And then last week they were closed.
Right.
So this past week we did it again, man, and it was funny. I got up there and I was like, fuck these songs. Like, I don't want to play any of this shit, right? Like, it's funny because last time I did it, like, I've been good about, like, excited about it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like, yeah, I'm going to play these songs, you know, acoustic. Yeah, yeah. And I guess it's because we took such a break. I don't know what it is, but, and since then also, we just recorded with Lars, right, you know, a month ago. So all this band stuff's been happening in my head, you know, and, like, been working on the recordings, and then we've been working on a new song, and then just, you know, the other song, you know, all this band stuff, and then got back up there with just my guitar. I was like so uninspired, you know. I was like, fuck, man. All right, hey everybody, I'm Nathan Arlen. Here's some songs for you. Shit, fucking fuck this song, you know. So yeah, it's weird, but you know, but you're right, there's something. But there's something great about that. The cool thing about playing by yourself is that if you get offered a gig, you don't have to check with anybody else.
Yeah.
Maybe make sure the guys can do it. No, you just, I can do that.
Yeah.
And then you're done. And that's it. You don't have to worry about any, it's just you. It's all on you.
Yeah.
You know, that's the cool thing and the scary thing, you know, I guess.
There is something also like doing, it sounds like an old guy thing, but it is, and it sucks. When I played, I had this band, Liars and Saints, with Casey Crowley and Jeremy Nail and these guys. It was like three singers. It was super cool. But I played keyboards, electric guitar, and acoustic guitar.
Oh.
And just the schlep just was just real fucking like, Jesus Christ. And then I started being like, man, I only play keyboards on two songs.
right. Yeah, why don't we even, fuck the keyboards.
But you have them for a reason, you know what I mean? Because you're trying to do something a little different. So that really, that sort of soured that experience for me.
Yeah, that sucks.
It was just a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the, no, you're right, you know, and it's a mindset.
Sometimes I think you do this long enough, you can look at it and go like, okay, it's going to be a lot of work, but I think I can do it.
Right.
And I think I'll get something out of it.
Right.
But then sometimes you're like, okay, this looks like a lot of work.
Right.
Period.
Right. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to, you know, got to pick your battles.
Yeah. So you guys, you put out these songs on your website, which, by the way, let me ask you a question. How do you get .band?
Do you just buy it?
I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I didn't either until we were looking at, you know, domain names a few weeks ago. And, you know, we're looking at all the... and then .band kept coming up. And it was the most expensive one. It was like $30 for that domain name.
Okay.
But we did all this research on it. And that's kind of the... it seems like... I think the reason why it was so expensive is... a lot of people are starting to use that now. A lot of bands are starting to use that now. So
sure.
I guess that's going to be the, for a band, you know, a lot of people are using the .band instead of .com because there's some, you know, so that's what it's available.
People can find you guys at the bigfix.band.
.band.
And you have three songs up. Great songs, man.
Thanks,
and they sound great.
Thanks.
You're singing great. I always thought you have great songs. I always thought you were a great singer.
Thanks.
What plans do you guys have for the rest of the year? What does 2015 look like for the Big Fix?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Right now, we're just trying to book
shows.
You know, I mean, we've had two shows. So we had our first show in February, and then we had one a couple weeks ago for South By. And that's it. We have something tentative coming up at the end of the April. Not sure yet. And then, you know, I'm just kind of, it's funny because, you know, I haven't really been in the music scene.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so long. So I'm just kind of reconnecting and just trying to, you know, one reason why I wanted to get, you know, these three songs recorded was, if nothing else, just to hand out to clubs.
Yeah.
Like, here's what we sound like. Give us a slot, you know, let us play. We'll bring some people and we'll rock it out. So right now that's kind of, I want to record some more. I'd like to have a record by the end of the year. You know, so those three songs would be part of that probably, you know, or at least an EP. I don't know. Still trying to figure all of that out. and just play, man. Just play as much as I can. Yeah.
We should do a show together. I have a band now.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
What's your
it's,
band called?
It's Johnny and the Ladies Room.
That's right. Okay, Johnny.
It's me and some girls.
That's cool.
Yeah. Because I don't, I guess I'm in the scene. I mean, all I really do is play with Skyrocket and play by myself a lot. So Skyrocket's in a different world than regular bands because we're just a cover band. But, and the girls were like, oh, let's get some gigs. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, where?
Yeah.
But like, I know all these places, but I'm just like, Where do you go? Do I go to the same old places I've always played, the same old dudes? Should I try some new places? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, yeah, and that's the thing. There are so many new... I feel like there's a lot of new
places. A lot of new places
now,
yeah.
You know?
But let me ask you this, because this is... And I will come clean. There's some places that I don't even ask, because I feel like they're going to go like, who are you? I used to be this guy.
Do you know who I think I am?
Do you know I used to be?
Do you know who I think I am? Yeah. Do you know who I used to be?
I mean, do you ever get that? Do people like Endo what?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just like, I don't even mention it. You know, I'm like, I had this band. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to do that too.
You know, and then if push it, okay, so this is what I did and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm not like, I know how it works. You know, I'm not going to show up and my gear is going to be cutting out. You know, I mean, I'm
right.
I can handle myself in a professional manner.
I would hope that we wouldn't have to prove that.
Right. But you know, you never know, you know, club doesn't, you know, they're asking you. And
there's a club that pretty, I mean, that was aware of who I was, and I was like, yeah, I'll play there. Oh, they were like, oh yeah, that'd be great. I fill out our questionnaire.
Fill out our questionnaire.
I can't say what club it is. I'll tell you later though.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a question. How many people can you guarantee you will bring? And I literally wrote 5 to 120.
Right, right.
I have no idea, but I have seen both of those things happen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's weird, and it was just kind of like
weird.
Yeah,
it's like,
how many Twitter followers do you have?
What?
How many? Yeah, a lot of stuff like that.
Fuck that.
But that's been happening for a long time. Like even labels.
No, I know, yeah.
Would look at MySpace and
right.
see how many plays you have.
Right.
And then, like,
how many people are following you? How many friends you have?
Yeah. 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 I'm not going to lie. I've done that on here. I've looked at someone's Twitter thing and been like, dude, you have like 40 followers, dude.
Right. Right.
Come on.
Right. Dude, I'm not even on Twitter. So, yeah, that's my excuse.
That's how you made it on the show. No, but I mean, I try not to. I try to judge people honestly, like, if they're making music and working hard. Because it's not really my point to, like, had bands, plenty of bands on here that I don't like.
Right, 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 right.
And that if it was a show that was just based on my taste and it wasn't, like, just a show,
right.
They wouldn't have been on it.
Well, yeah, but you're right. I mean, if you can, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, yeah.
It's weird. It's hard to judge in this time, isn't it?
It is.
Because no one's having an easy time.
No. No. You know, like you know, you made
I mean,
the point.
Paul McCartney's recording with Kanye West.
Yeah, Jesus
that's where he's
Christ,
at.
Christ, yeah. Like, how low do you have to go? Paul, what the... Dude.
He literally
Paul,
is like
you
making
know you
songs
were,
like Rihanna and Kanye West.
Yeah, dude. It's like, you know, you were in the Beatles. Right, you remember that? And you had wings. Remember that?
Yeah.
You remember all that music?
The cool thing about him though is he's never stopped.
No,
he's
he has
moving forward.
He hasn't, and I'm not a Kanye fan or anything, but Paul McCartney, you know, one of the funniest. It's really, I mean, he's awesome, you know, and I read something like he still gets all excited.
Oh yeah,
when he hears himself on the radio, he's like,
oh really?
Yeah, he'll be like, that's which. Look, they're playing me on the radio. Oh, that's me. It's my voice. That's a song I wrote.
That's awesome.
Like, that's pretty cool. You
yeah.
know, like, you can still get excited about that. You know, you know.
He seems to still get excited just making music.
He
collaborates
does.
With a lot of people and just, you know.
He does.
I don't know. It must be weird when you get to 70 and you're like, oh, shit.
How do I
go do some stuff?
Right.
How do I
Right. How do I, right. Or how do I remain relevant? I'm not relevant anymore. You know?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that was, I mean.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a lot why he decided to, you know, to reach a whole different audience.
But also,
know?
I mean
he's a smart guy when it comes to, you know.
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, and talented. So you guys are going to be looking for shows. People can find this music on your website and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they can follow you on Facebook. You do have a Facebook page.
We do have a Facebook page. Yeah, The Big Fix. And I've got a Facebook page, Nathan Harlan.
Nathan Harlan. How do people find like some of the movies that you've been in, some of the stuff that you've worked on? They find out about that.
I was in this movie called The Overbrook Brothers, which IFC bought, and it's on iTunes. I don't think it's on Netflix. I'm not sure where else you can buy. I know there's a few other places you can buy, probably Amazon or something.
You have an IMDb page?
I do have an IMDb page. Okay. Yeah.
Nathan Harlan.
Right. Yeah. So you can go in there and you can look at, you know, the stuff I've done. You know, and then, you know, search those movies, I guess.
Yeah. Is there any new movies out that you'd say, hey, I saw this movie, people should go see it?
Man, I haven't, you know, I'm bad about that. I have not seen, I was talking to someone the other day. I can't remember the last movie I saw in the theater.
What's the last movie I saw in the theater?
I think it was
Titanic.
I think it might have been besides South By and
did you go to some stuff at South By?
I did. I saw a couple of features, local filmmakers.
Cool.
And then I saw the short program, the Texas short program, and actually a movie, so the Overbrook Brothers, which I acted in, is made by this, local filmmaker, director named John Bryant. And, he just, premiered his short film, which I did, a little bit of sound on. We went out to Marfa for like a couple of days and it was a super stripped down crew. And I did sound for John's a good friend. And I was like, hey, anyway, I can help, you know,
what was the doc?
So no, it's not a doc. It's just a short film, but it's called, The Samaritans, and it won the jury award.
Oh, awesome.
At South By this year. So it's a great short film. It's dark. It's a dark comment on, religion. It's funny, it's dark, it's bloody, it's good. The Samaritans, I don't know, you can't really see that anywhere, but,
isn't that sad? I was seeing a lady who directed a beautiful short documentary, that was actually shot out in Marfa.
Oh, okay.
About this couple and their goat cheese farm, but it's more about like the couple and how they love gets you through everything. I mean, it's really beautiful, it's really touching, but it's like 9 minutes long and you're just kind of like, I was like, man, you don't make your money back on a documentary. No. But like, how the fuck do you get a 9 minute documentary shown anywhere except for at those jury things,
man? That's it, really, you know. I mean,
what's the outlet for something like that? What's an outlet for a short film?
There really isn't. You know, the only in the States, there really isn't. So what? Like, I know John, the movie, The Overbrook Brothers, that we made, was based on a short film that he made. That I think it won the jury prize at Sundance the year that he premiered it. I might be wrong, but I know it did really well. I think it did. I know it did really well, though. And so because of that, he was able to get money for the feature. And basically, the short film is a scene that we reshot for, that was a scene in the feature. Basically, the Overbrook Brothers, what the movie's basically about are, my character goes home for Christmas or for Thanksgiving. Christmas or Thanksgiving? I think it's Christmas. It's Christmas. I go home for Christmas to Colorado, bring my girlfriend. I haven't seen my family in a while. It's my dad and my two brothers. And it's really one brother in particular that we just don't get along. Anyway, he ends up telling me at Christmas dinner that I'm adopted. We get into this kind of this fight, kind of, you know, over the, and he ends up telling me I'm adopted. I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, fuck you too. And that night I end up, and he's like, no, I found it, and I found the documents in Dad's drawer. you know, in the desk that he always keeps locked, you know, like he's just pushing my buttons, you know. So that night I go break into dad's desk, and sure enough, I find my adoption papers, but I also find his adoption papers. So he comes in, and, you know, dad comes in like, what are you doing in my desk? You know, I'm like, well, dad, what is this? You know, and I'm like, hey, guess what, Todd? You're fucking adopted too, you know? And so then it's our journey. I'm like, I'm going to go find my adopted. This is where it was from.
Wow.
Like, cause we're in Colorado at the time. That's where everyone lives. So I'm like at this adoption agency in Austin, Texas. Right. So I'm going to go find out who my parents are. And Todd's like, well, I'm coming too, you know? And it's like, no, don't, you know, this is like, fuck you. No, I'm going to go. And then he like follows me. And then it's this whole journey. And then, you know, we end up becoming brothers basically through this experience, you know?
Wow.
And
it's That sounds great.
It's a great script. I'm awful in it, but I can't look at my shit and go, oh, it was great. You know,
it is hard to always, watch that kind of stuff.
It is. Same with like, you know, playing, recording a song, right? You're like always, you record something.
I don't have
something
a problem hearing him. I do have a problem like, when always, I see myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just saw, I think it's the idea of like, I never feel like it's finished, like the work's finished. Like even with a song, I feel like a lot of times, months later, I'll listen to it, like, damn, you know, I should have fucking, oh, that's a cool melody.
Yeah.
Like maybe I should have done that on, you know, or, you know, it's always, so that's, yeah. But same thing, when I see myself, I'm like, oh, shit, that's a bad choice. I should have made this choice.
Oh, see, I don't think that, you never watch yourself walk or talk to people.
Right.
And so maybe when you act, you adopt a different, I don't know if you're that kind of actor.
Yeah, it depends on the role. Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know.
Right, you become
you walk
this character.
Differently, you stand
right.
differently. Like, I always feel like I'm hunched over and, like, I look stupid right. and my nose is huge.
I feel you. Yeah, I know. I know. I feel like a lump of shit over here. Like, God damn, really? I sit like that?
For like a month, I was playing keyboards with a straight back because of Paul McCartney was on that SNL 40th thing. And he's, like, playing. And I was like, hey, that guy really has great posture when he's sitting at the piano. I'm going to start doing that, too.
That's funny.
Yeah. Not be some slouching dude.
Right.
Yeah.
You get all over-critical, over self-conscious. Yeah.
So people should check that out. The Overbrook Brothers, you can find it on iTunes. Look up Nathan Harlan on IMDb and on Facebook. You can look up The Big Fix on Facebook. You guys post when you have shows.
We do.
And you can go listen to the songs of the Big Fix band. Am I missing anything?
No, man.
I'm glad that we reconnected. I'm glad that...
Me too, man.
Yeah. You know, I never see Casey, but we're not friends. I just have never seen him again.
Yeah.
I mean, since he had a baby.
Oh, he had a baby.
He did?
Wow.
Well, he didn't.
Well, but someone did.
A miracle, man. He did. Did you guys hear Casey? Oh, man, he got a new record. Dude. No, dude, he had a baby.
No, he
a
had
wiener
a
baby.
Baby. A wiener baby.
A wiener baby. Well, hopefully maybe we could all have lunch. I remember when you guys used to play chess. I always liked that.
Oh, yeah.
When did you guys play chess? At that lady's house.
It's been a lot. What lady's house?
In
where?
Our home away from home.
Oh,
in
Nashville?
No, in Georgetown.
Oh, in Georgetown.
Yeah. In Georgetown.
Oh, in D.C., outside of D.C. Oh, yeah. Tatiana's.
Tatiana's.
Yes, yes. That's right. We were playing chess over there.
Yeah.
Damn, I missed Tatiana. I'm gonna say,
remember how crazy we all were the night before, and then just seeing you guys in this focused game of chess, like with all this concert, it was like we're completely different people than we were yesterday.
Oh, my God, dude. That night was. Epic. That was the night Daryl got arrested, right?
The night Daryl went to jail. And then you, me, and Casey had to sleep in some Best Western because some guy got sick of us looking for the party.
That's right.
And he just dropped us off just randomly
sketchy,
at a hotel.
Sketchy ass place. Wow, what a night. God.
Stuff like that doesn't happen to me anymore at all.
Yeah, me neither.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank God, man. I still want to, you know, I need to talk to Daryl. I still want to see if he's got those pictures. Because do you remember seeing those pictures he took when he was on the highway?
He was on the highway.
He's like
that's
laying
he
down on
for.
The highway. Yeah, he's laying down on the highway, and he has all these selfies of him like with 18 wheelers in the background coming right toward him, and he's in the middle of the night just laying in the middle of the highway. That's why he got arrested. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, I want to see those pictures. I remember him showing me. I think he erased them because Mindy wasn't too happy about any of that.
Well, we were all.
I think her ex was his lawyer.
Oh, really?
I think so, because he lived in D.C., you know, because that was a thing.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
It all happened in D.C., so Daryl had to go, every couple months, he had to go back there to deal with it, yeah.
Oh.
And
it wasn't just a funny story.
No, he had to, like, because once he got arrested, then, you know, other things came out of his mouth.
Right.
that the judge wasn't too happy about. And so he had a lot of damage control to deal with. But I think Mindy, it was like her ex that like was his lawyer, you know, it was this whole, she's like, you're going to get me in the middle of this. God damn it, Daryl.
The best though was the night that he got out of jail, and then we all sat at Tatiana's like big table having dinner. We're drinking all this wine, and then he got up and read his arrest report.
Oh, yes.
And when the cop, I asked Mr. Moran, how much he had to drink, and he said, too much.
Yeah, too much. Yeah. That's what I want.
God. Okay. Crazy times in Indochine. Thank you for coming. People, get out there and check out The Big Fix. Awesome. I'm glad we're friends, and I'm glad we're alive.
No, I'm glad we're alive too, man. Do you come back home again?
All right. The Big Fix, Nathan Harlan. What a great guy. It was great getting to catch up with him. Get out there and check them out at thebigfix.band. Hey, I got to get one of those dot bands. JohnnyGowdy.band. How did I get here? I wonder if there's going to be a dot pod someday. Anyway, hey, great catching up with Nathan. I'd like to thank him for coming by. Get out there and check out The Big Fix. They've got some music online. You're hearing it here. You will hear another song in a minute called Sarah. Some recordings that they did with our friend Lars Gorenson. I actually met Lars through them. So, you know, hey, this is also a call out to Lars. Got to be on the show. We need to do a poolside chat. The weather's getting good, and he's got a nice pool with the slide. He makes a great mojito, and we have talked about for the last 3 years doing a podcast by his pool. Maybe this will be the year, 2015. Lars Gorenson, if you're listening, let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, get out there and check out The Big Fix. My friend Nathan Harlan, formerly of Indochine. I'd love to see some of those screenplays too, man. He's a talented man. A lot to say, a lot of great music, and a great musician, a great performer. Get out there and check them out, The Big Fix. All right, thank you so much for listening. While you're looking out there at The Big Fix, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You will get a new episode every Tuesday and every Friday for free. And also, you can find us on Stitcher, which is a podcast app for your phone or pad, and that streams it like the Netflix style. So, if you got a plan where you stream stuff, do it. Get out there on Stitcher. There's tons of shows out there. All the great ones, Fresh Air, WTF. This show, How Did I Get Here? Of course. All right, I want to thank Nathan again for coming and being on the show. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. See photos and see stupid things that I say sometimes when I'm watching television by myself. Thank you, Nathan, for coming by. Everyone get out there and check out The Big Fix. Here's some more music by them, a song called Sarah. You go to their page and you can check out these songs, okay? Thank you for listening. Really, I do appreciate it. Let's get down.